The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. Well, how's it going? What's up in your Misfit world? I have officially wrapped my Standing Tall Together tour. It was really exciting and so exhausting. And just like, you know, even though there's like space in between, there was like a lot, like a pause kind of between March and April. There was like a week or two where I didn't have anything going on. You're always thinking about it. And so to have that, you know, now it feels like, you know, spring is around. It's a little cold right now in New York, but like it's getting warmer and by the day, and it's the sun's out at least, and it just feel that like, all right, time to relax a bit. But it was amazing to see misfits from all over the country and feel the need to celebrate what makes everyone weird and to acknowledge what makes everyone weird and how we all feel like alienated from ourselves and each other and hold shame and embarrassment about different things that have either happened to us or our family or like in our world. And yeah, it's a hard time and an important one in order to remember that we are not alone. Yes, we are in community. So that it's just was wonderful. And I saw that over and over and over again. And I just feel so privileged and honored and grateful for the opportunity to do that. So like, hooray. Yes. So let's get into it, guys. Oh, before we get into the incredible interview with Andrea Claire, reminder, please rate and review the podcast. Social proof is super important for misfits because misfits trust other misfits to know what's good. You can also sign up at laurenloji.com and you'll get monthly updates, or you could sponsor a podcast. We make it accessible for individuals and small businesses. You could simply go to Lauren Loji, click on listen and podcast and contact us there. Today, we have an interview with Andrea Claire, who is an architect, a lighting designer, and an artist. And I know Andrea personally. We met through surfing. She's an incredible surfer. And oh my God, her artwork makes me happy. It's just, she creates, her story is such a misfit story. Like, it's basically seeing where things were going and being like, I am not going to follow the path the other people around me are following, and I'm going to do my own thing. And like, boy, has she done her own thing. She has put her lighting designs in all over the world. Like, I never know where she is installing something really cool somewhere really cool. Some names include Rosewood Hotels, David Kleinberg, Robert A.M. Stern, Nicole Hollis, Victoria Hagen. I once saw Robert A.M. Stern at a party. He was kind of short, if I'm remembering. Anyway, but these are very short, but very impressive people. They are very impressive people. She's put herself all over the place. She's a dope artist, a dope human, and a dope misfit. And you're going to love hearing about how she's made all this misfit stuff work and happen. Let's cut to it with your misfit friend and mine, Andrea Claire. All right. Okay. Well, right. And you go by Andrea Claire. And is Claire your last name?
Well, that's a thing. No, not officially, but it is. So when I went to art school and wanted to be my own person, I decided, fuck the patriarchy, and I'm going to ditch my dad's name. So okay. Claire is literally actually my middle name. Okay. So it just sounded nice to me, and okay, that's what I did. So I stopped using Bradley was the birth name, and I only have to use it now when I travel internationally.
So then we'll say an official welcome, Andrea Claire.
Sorry, that was a long story. Just asking my name. Okay, that's a good start.
I love it. Well, it's cool, and that makes you even cooler because you're one of the coolest people I know, actually.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
And I think there's certain, like, I don't know, Gen X people are just like really cool. Like, you're I was telling Chris, yeah, like Greatest Generation, you all are like just super authentic, and you just do things like from your gut in this way that I think we've lost.
I like that, you know, because like I think Gen X gets overlooked a lot because we're not big. And you know, there's not a lot of us, I guess, compared to the boomers and the everybody else.
Right.
So a lot of times they just say, oh, boomers, and then these or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, wait, we're still here. Yeah. What about us?
But Gen X being forgotten is very Gen X.
It is. Totally. Like, nobody cared about us when we were growing up. We just were like free range. And yeah.
Right, but I've been trying to do. I have this bit about Gen X being the greatest generation, so I'm bringing it back, Andrea, being like millennial, like really, just appreciating Gen X because you all like created your own way in these very unique ways, and like you continue to,
yeah,
do it,
yeah,
like yeah. with your business, which is yeah. the coolest. So tell Thank us you. About how you figured out how to do it.
Well, I suffered for a long time in jobs that I hated. So what do they say? All good things come from suffering.
Yeah.
You know, very Buddhist of me, I guess. But I studied architecture. I went to RISD. Well, you know, the questions you had originally sent, you were like, how did you know you were a misfit? And I guess I didn't even know that until I went to RISD when I fit in. Like mm-hmm. I fit in there. And I realized I hadn't fit in anywhere else. So I was like, oh, this is, and you know, when I went to grad school, I actually used to call it the land of misfit toys. And we were all misfit Yay. Toys because it was like this weird little building up on a hill surrounded by eucalyptus trees. And anyway, but going back to the question, you know, so I went to study architecture because I didn't know what else to do. I was really an artist, but I didn't know you could be an artist. Like there was no consciousness of that mm-hmm. for me. Yeah. I mean, a lot of that. Artists say that. They're yeah. like, I didn't know that was an option. And then, so I studied architecture because like, that's something I thought I knew what that was. I didn't end up knowing really what that was, but anyway, I got in there and studied and so then I did that for a long time, which was not fun at all, but for a lot of reasons it's a terrible place to be a woman, at least back then, still probably mostly, but so I did that for a long time, and I knew how to make things. Like I worked for a long time building and making things, and then I also went to grad school for art at CalArts, the land of misfit toys. And when the 2008 crash happened of art, you know, the economy, there was no architecture where you just get wiped. We got wiped out. Like there was no work. We all got laid off and it just kept going on and on and on. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't want to do it anymore. Anyway, I'm going to do my own thing. And I had been making a line of lighting that was like selling at the Future Perfect, which was like a little store at that mm-hmm. time in Williamsburg. And, I was like, yeah, I could do that, but those I'm not going to make money with. And I'm tired of doing shit that doesn't make money. So I want to do something that like is profitable. And I thought, well, lighting, there's a good markup in it. And I know how to do it. Like I knew I had all the skills at that point. Like I knew there was a hole in the market. There wasn't like something, there was a couple things like it out there, but I was like, I'm going to do it my own way, my own thing, and figure it out. And so anyway, that's a long way to answer the question, I guess.
And how would you describe what you make?
Oh, I design and fabricate custom chandeliers based on mm-hmm. These systems that I develop. So system meaning like it's kind of think of Legos, how it's the same building block, but you can make a different shape or a different thing out of it. So I design these building blocks that are made out of brass in different shapes, and then we put them together in different configurations, and then it becomes like a tall thing or asymmetrical. They're mostly all asymmetrical, but like it can be really big or small, and I like making the big ones the best. And then I kind of invented this shape and a way of constructing it. So yeah, it's a chandelier, but it's not a traditional chandelier.
It's so. Like an art piece.
It's an art piece. They're sculptural. Yeah, we call them, what do we call them? Sculptural lighting pieces. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so you said you invented the shape. Is there like a patent kind of thing?
I did never patented it. Patents are really cumbersome to figure out. And I looked into it, with a lawyer, but at the time I didn't really have enough money to do it. It costs a bunch of money. You got to pay lawyers, and it's just a lot of paperwork. And so I never did. The lawyer I spoke to back in the day, this is back when I was living in New York and working there, and he was like, you can copyright it. That's easier. But like the thing about design is it's not very well protected. So I could patent it and copyright it, but I've been ripped off and there's really not much you can do. Like I sent a cease and desist letter to some guy who ripped me off for this, the Line Hotel here in LA. He put him in every room of this, but they're like bad copies of my stuff. But I can't prove that he knew of me before. There's like a lot of weird, it's not copyright law and for design, it was, lawyers think a chair is a chair, even though they're like 5 million different types of chairs, but it's a chair to a lawyer. So they're like, you can't copyright that or you can't patent it. So anyway.
And I remember coming to see your work at the Armory show with
That's right. That's right. You and Carl came.
And we were walking around and like seeing other lighting. Like it seemed like there were some concepts that they were perhaps borrowing from you, but like but like badly and like
Oh,
missing
that's
the
sweet.
mark. And like your when I came to see yours, it was like yours were clearly the best and like more, look, the most artful, and like yours are real. Like that was just some like fake bullshit that like they're trying to make money and rip people off, but like yours were like actual the real. So like yet like dumb people go for fakes. So I guess how do you not lose your mind in the process?
I just don't think about it. I've been so lucky. I got into I got into the game of making chandeliers at a good time, and I think people started catching on later that it was like a really fun thing to design, and you could actually make a decent business out of it. And so I started a reputation kind of early on. I first launched in 2011. At ICFF. And I know I just do my thing. Like I can't be worried about, I'm busy, I'm not going to worry about, And I like there's a thing out there for everybody. Like not everybody thinks my thing is great. So, the guy in the booth next to me may be perfect for that other person or the house or whatever, it's fine. There's a lot of, I just don't worry about it.
Just stay in your lane. Eyes on the paper. That's
And I
right. That's
feel
right.
like very grateful and lucky that it's working for me, and I have employees and it's profitable. It's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you
It's
were
fun.
like, yeah, now you're like a big boss, big deal.
I'm a big boss. One of my employees calls me boss. And I'm like, that's good. Just keep that's good. I'm on a
Going.
yeah. Everybody just call me boss. I was born to be the boss.
And what's cool too is that you still get a lot of play in the art world. Like your stuff's in like in collections.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people that buy what I make also buy art, but it's not considered art in the sense it's not in the art world. I'm not selling stuff in a gallery, like an art gallery. I'm not working with museums. I'm happy about that, to be honest. Like I worked in that where I did a lot of art. I made paintings for years and I didn't find it very satisfying world to exist in. It was a lot of fun for a while when I was younger and going to the openings and all of that, going out at night. But after a while, it's like it doesn't give you a lot back. Like there's, we've heard this about art, there's like the three people at the top and then there's everybody else that has to like pick up crumbs. And it's like after a while, like this is not fun anymore. So
So would you,
design is a lot easier, I think,
I mean,
for
would you
me.
tell people trying to figure it out, like, just don't find out a way to not to opt out of the system totally, do something totally different?
It kind of depends on how their personality. For me, it wasn't a good fit personality-wise, I think. Like some people really thrive in that world. Not a lot, there's only a few that can really make it happen. But if you had a trust fund and dad bought you a loft in Soho, then you're good. Go for it. It's hard. It's hard to make a living at. But also, like, I can't say don't be an artist. It's a great thing to do. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you're an artist. You're an artist. Yeah. I mean, you're like your art, like basically it's you're using art and then creating a product with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see a lot of, there's a little bit of a division, I think, but I don't see them that differently. But there are people that do. They're like, no, that's design. That's fine. It's functional, what I make.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, there are some artists that have, like Jorge Pardo is an amazing artist. Right, and he sold lighting in a gallery at Gagosian. And for a lot of money, these like pretty simple lights, they're cool. And I respect him. He's a great artist. But that didn't seem to be a problem. Like, that's the thing about the art, it's like how you sell it is really tricky. Like, it's hard. I was never good at it.
Right. I mean, like, it's like it feels like the divisions, in the end, good stuff is good stuff. Like, people make divisions for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, and there's also like so much good work that gets nowhere. It goes nowhere. It just it depends on you know, I always said the art world's like fairy dust. You either get the fairy dust or you don't get the fairy dust. Like, the work can be really good and you just never get the fairy dust and you just toil away in obscurity forever.
Right. Well, that's maybe like the vet, like the thing about luck is like people, I have friends who like, who overestimate like how much it has to do with talent and underestimate luck, and then they judge themselves based on that.
Yeah, it's terrible because you do, you judge yourself. And our world, people are generally speaking, artists are a little bit insecure and they judge themselves a lot, you know, and it's like maybe that's why they go into it in the first place, because you want validation. I don't know. Probably that was my issue. Didn't get it from home, so I was looking for it elsewhere, you know. Thanks, mom and dad. But it's a hard place to get successful too. So it's like you're kind of asking for something you can't have, and stuff.
Yeah. Always like the unreachable, because there'll always be like another level and you're like, oh, not enough. I don't feel it.
It is always that. Always that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how do you come up with the ideas for your pieces?
Well, different things. Like, so the first one, an initial design was based on these paintings that I was making, because I was making these abstract, hard edge abstract paintings, and I really liked the shapes. And I used to, what did I call them? Of indented geometries, because they were like, they look like something you know, but then it doesn't make sense. It would like kind of fall apart. And I was really into that. But I didn't want to make art anymore. And I thought, well, I like those shapes, but how can I take those things like off the canvas and make them three-dimensional and then make them light up? So that was the original thing. And, you know, I think I got kind of successful with that. And then since then, I think I have six lines now, six collections. The last one we just did, I'm actually launching it in September in New York at a show called Collectible. So, and that kind of came. So at this point, they kind of build on each other. So I was using some of the processes that we use in the studio now, like some of the materials and the way that we work and what we like making, is because I've done some things that I thought would be fun to do and they end up being like not fun at all to make. Like, some of the processes can be really like either toxic or too like complicated. Like, we do this casting of fiberglass, super complicated. You have to make this like vacuum sealed mold, and it's like reservoirs of resin, and it's like super complex. This was like, I want to do something that we like making. So we've been working with paper, and it's a really nice material. It's beautiful. It's handmade Korean paper. So I wanted to work with that, but I wanted it to have a very different hanging system. And I had this idea about these things that are stacked. You know, I've always liked, you know, the work of Andy Goldsworthy. I don't know if you know his work. He's a Irish artist. He does sculpture outside mostly he'll take rocks or leaves and he makes these designs out of them or ice, and then it melts. Mm-hmm. Like, they're really beautiful. And I don't know, it just kind of developed from there. I started working with its engineer and I was doing sketches and I don't know, it takes a while.
Yeah.
And I also wanted that, the idea I was thinking of is I've always thought of chandeliers as jewelry for space. So it's like, you know how you know, you have an outfit and then you're like you're, and then you put the jewelry on last and you're like, now it's done. And that's what it's like with space and lighting. I think it just adds that bling and,
extra.
You know, extra thing that, and it's not quite ready without that. You know, it's not done without it. So I wanted to kind of jump into that idea more. So these were kind of based on jewelry and these stacked shapes. And so I don't know. Yeah. That's how that one came about.
Right.
I did one that was all surfing inspired.
Yeah. I remember that one. Yeah. Do you think they're all, because they all seem like have natural elements, like nature seems a part of.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's hard to not be inspired by nature. And, you know, it's like endlessly interesting, you know, the shapes and the construction of it. And like, how does that happen? Like, I'm looking at this, I get this, like, I mean, look at this thing. It's just amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah, we could never make anything this cool.
Right.
Like, it's impossible. So, yeah, it's easy to be inspired by that. And, you know, I like being outside and
stuff.
I
mean,
you're a but beautiful. I don't like, I don't want, also, I don't want to like mimic it. Because you can't, like you, like I say, you can't really make anything that's that cool or beautiful or like imperfectly perfect. So we try to use some ideas about nature without like saying, oh, it's based on a whatever leaf or something specific.
Right. That's really cool.
That's just my take on it anyway.
Yeah. And then how do you use failure to figure out like trial and error and like making mistakes in what you do?
Totally. Mistakes are so important. I mean, you know, you don't try to make mistakes, they just happen, right? You got to recognize it. So it's like they happen and you got to feel like when a mistake happens, it's an opportunity, right? So you can't be like, oh, I fucked up. You're like, well, that was interesting. What am I going to use out of that? Anything? Maybe not anything, but maybe something. So,
Super. I mean, because what you do is like, you have to put something out there to market. So like, how do you know if it's, you know, how do you know?
You know, some of them just, you know, fall on their heads. Yeah. I've done a couple of pieces that are collections and I'm like, yeah, nobody's buying this thing. I thought it was awesome when it was done and like, nobody's interested. You just don't know. I don't want to worry about that so much. Like, I don't think about it that way. When I make something, it's like, well, I think it's good. If I think it's good, maybe a couple other people will, you know, but not always. Sometimes it does. And then if I look back on the ones that kind of fail, I can usually tell why. Like, I didn't put enough into it, or I was trying to make it something without being like more kind of genuine thing that I wanted to do. Like, I thought it should be something instead of what I don't know.
And how
I
do you
rushed things
from
a couple
that?
Times.
Yeah.
And you how just do you move on. You know. You make stuff for your, like, I've made things my whole life and failure is just part of it. You gotta move on.
Yeah.
I went to architecture school too, you know, it's brutal. Like you would design something and then they have these juries, they call them, and you put your stuff up and you explain what you thought and they're like, and they tear you apart. So you get a thick skin after a while. You're like, well, it's just one idea. I'll have more, hopefully. Yeah. You never know. Sometimes I think I'll never have another idea, but.
Yeah, it comes.
That happens.
It reminds me of, it reminds me of clown school when I got beaten with a shoe. I feel like it's something you get like thick skin with
painful.
That.
Painful.
It was kind of fun, actually, a little bit thrilling, but you know, nothing like gets you over. It gives you a thick skin in a way than like facing failure and shame.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of like being an artist, right? Like you can't. You can't be all like butthurt because somebody doesn't like your stuff. And it's just like, well, you're not the right audience. Or maybe it just sucks. Like, you know, you can't be good all the time.
Right.
Like, that's just too arrogant, you know.
Right. So I guess it's like you just expect like some of it might not hit, and that's just it.
Yeah. I mean, you don't go into it thinking like, all right, I'm going to make this, it's going to suck. But, you know, you got to go into it with the right attitude. But when it doesn't work, you know, you just got to move on.
Right.
Yeah.
I was looking at Totem today and it seems so cool. Oh, I'm so excited. I remember when you were doing the sketches back in January.
Oh, yeah.
Sketches. It's so cool. Yeah. I hope you, I have dreams for you to sell it to like some idiot who's like, be like, I'm going to make it to the moon and be like, how much does it cost? Infinity. Just like that. You know, and just like on your website, you kind of like talk about, how it like is an evolution of like what you, cause it's like all of the things that have like come together from everything you've done.
I wanted to work with some of these processes that we've developed that work well and we like using, but doing it in a slightly different way and having like a different system, which I mean, the way that the thing hangs, you know, like, like the engineering of it,
I
wanted it to be very different than the previous ones, which I've done it all kind of more like, mobiles. And this thing does move, but it's just very linear. And I want to make this into a mobile too. That's like the next step.
I feel like as the consumer, as like a consumer, I'm like, oh, to me, it just like the idea of a totem, you know, like Native Americans had totems, like
they tell
a story. I mean, and the way it's like, seems like you can custom it, make it. And like, it's just like so much, it's like tells a story like deliberately for each person, right? Cause it's a different thing for each person.
Yeah, it'd be slightly different. I mean, I wanted it. So the other shapes mostly that I've worked with are just way more kind of abstract. I mean, this is an abstract shape too, but they kind of look like they mean something. I mean, there's a moon shape. That's something you can kind of like understand. Yeah. And then there's this other one that we call sage. It's almost like a guitar shape. And then there's this one I call August. That's kind of like loopy and almost like a flower, but it's not. So the idea was kind of like, well, I want it to be somewhat recognizable, but also not something you kind of get either. Like you don't know what it is, but you think you know what it is. And so there is some meaning without me telling you what the meaning is, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. Cause I feel like I had like a lot of meanings in my head and like, yeah, that's why I'm like, oh, it has to do with like ancestry and like individuality and like, you know, groundedness and nature. And it seems all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's true. And that's cool that you saw that in it. I guess the idea of totem, because it, these things that are stacked, right? And those tell stories, right? Those traditionally, and I guess Native American cultures would tell a story. And I don't really have a specific story to tell with it, except the story of like the studio and how we make things and, you know, working with, you know, interior designers and spaces. Right. And
you're so Gen X about it. You're so humble. Cause like everyone else would be like, yes, this is a manifestation of like historicity and like they're making some bullshit up and it'd be like, you know, taking a selfie with it, like history of the world, blank, you know. Like.
Yeah. I just hope that, you know, it works for some people.
No, and that's what makes you the coolest. That's what makes you the coolest. Thank yes, you. We get a clown horn. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess a lot of so many artists out there are like figuring out like, you know, the world keeps shifting and it's always, I feel like these decisions and creativity about how you make money needs to be happening. Like you have to reinvent it all the time. Like from what you've learned, like what do you tell people who are trying to figure out how do I make money from what I do? Like for based on what you've gone through?
It's a tough one. I mean, this right now, obviously things are kind of fucked up. I mean, I don't know, maybe every generation feels that way. And I think I do feel like it's a bit different this time around, but I don't know what to tell people. I would tell them don't go into a lot of debt and go study in Europe is you can get a really good education there and it's cheap. And you don't have to deal with America's fucked up. Like the education system here is straight crazy expensive. I mean, yeah, great if you get a scholarship or something. And I did. I got scholarship, but I still owed money, like way too much. I mean, I regret that I went to like amazing expensive schools, and they weren't amazing because they were expensive, but that does end up kind of coinciding somehow. And but you know, I owed money for a very long time, and it definitely set me back. I mean, I had to pay back loans for 15 years or something like that. It sucked.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, and it's way more expensive now. And it's not like you're getting paid all that much more, even if you could get a job. So I think it doesn't make sense to go into tremendous amounts of debt to be an artist. But there are ways to do it and to learn and, you know, develop. It's like you got to develop your own language somehow. That's the hardest thing. And it just takes time and a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you got to find your point of view, you know. And I think it helps to like try on other people's points of views for a while. Like, oh, I think Jackson Pollock was great. I'm going to make splatter paintings for a while. And then you realize like, well, he did it way better than I could ever do. What else can I do? You know, like, so you have to like try, you know, fake it till you make it, I think, a little bit. Keep trying. I don't know. Sorry. Yeah.
It is.
Don't expect too much.
Yeah. Ray Gen X. Keep your expectations low.
Very low. Keep you from disappointment.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're saying, it's very true. It's like it's a marathon. So like you have to set yourself up for it to be a marathon.
Yeah.
Like don't, we're just talking to someone about like, well, if you're going to go do, if you're going to have a project that you think will move yourself forward, don't make it, like, don't drown yourself in debt to do it, because like,
no, I've seen people do that. And in fact, I've dated people that done that, and like, they're still crawling out from under. They thought, oh, this is going to be their big, you know, break, go into credit card debt. And, you know, it's so easy to do in this country, and it's really bad. And there's very little like support for the arts, you know, publicly. Yeah. So you kind of try to do it privately, and that's the way you do it. And it's just not a good combination.
Right.
Because, you know, in order to like really like get your head where your head needs to be to make something that's like really yours, that comes from your heart, it takes a lot of time, like years. And the only way to do that is to like have the time. And if you're like on a treadmill trying to pay back things or whatever, you can't, you'll never get there. You have to have a lot of space. Also, don't fucking look at your phone all the time.
Yeah.
I would say that to kids, because that'll ruin your brain. There's so much distraction with it, you know, like stay away from it, be bored a little bit. I mean, I'm not the first person to say this, but people these day kids, I think a lot of times they're just afraid of like not having a thought or not seeing something or like having a feedback loop of like input. And, you know, you can't come up with ideas if you're constantly like looking at the phone, basically.
Yeah.
It's really bad. Yeah. I think it's really bad for creativity.
Yeah. Having, because it's like you're getting a loop of things. It's hard to just,
I notice in myself, like if I start, and I try never to do this, but sometimes I pick up the phone in the morning, I'm screwed. If I pick up the phone and look at like Instagram for 10 minutes, even, I do not focus all day.
Hmm. Wow. It's amazing that you recognize that, because, you know, most people just do it and then they're like, fuck.
Yeah. And they don't realize, but there's a lot of research about this now, and it really does mess with your messes with your brain, the way your brain works. And I also won't look at it 2 hours before I go to bed, because I won't sleep right.
Yeah.
And then people are all freaked out about not sleeping, and then they take drugs and all this stuff. It's Just don't look at the phone 2 hours before you go to bed. You'll sleep so much better. Because it just like literally fucks up your brain waves and your eyeballs. And it's
Yeah,
very scientific thing I'm saying now. But sure. I know there are studies about it.
For sure. Yeah, I actually I quit scrolling years ago.
Yeah.
I don't scroll at all. The only thing I do, like, I just interact in a different way. Like, people interact with me, I'll go to their page directly and interact, see what they're up to.
So you only interact with people that reach out to you. So you just look at the
comments, and then also if someone friends me or I just see someone like something, I could sometimes I'll go to their page. So that's what I try to do. Yeah,
I try not to scroll too, but you know, every once in a while,
right, something will get. I mean, they're the best.
Afternoon, I'm like, I mean, in my business too, like, you kind of want to see what people are doing a little bit,
right?
And it's a good way to like kind of get an overview. And
yeah.
Most of my stuff that I see on there is design oriented. I don't get a lot of politics or anything like that. So
that's good. That's really good. Yeah. I keep a list of people. This is so old school, but I just like, I have to figure, like, I was like, I want to keep in touch with certain people for work stuff to see what they're up to, see like how things are going. And I just keep it on a note. And then I click on their, I clap their profile over and I click through every 6 weeks. Anyway. Nerd
systems. No, it's a good way to do it. Set up your boundaries.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's like it's crazy. I remember, where was I? It's somewhere with you, and the like. We were in the room, and you like started like switching on and off lights, and the lighting was bad.
I do that.
You're like, I can't.
I'll do that in people's homes. Like, do you mind if I just change this a little bit?
There's a lot of people out there who don't necessarily can't hire a lighting designer. Like, what is some good lighting tips for the rest of us? Yeah.
Stay away from what we call higher Kelvin temperatures. So it's like each light bulb has what's called a color temperature. And it's the frequency of the light and so the lower frequency is like 2700 Kelvin, and those are warmer. That for sure, stay on the warmer side. Like, you'll see these like bluish, you know, like you go into a, you know, some kind of ethnic restaurant and it's like, you know, and it's like too bright and too blue and everybody looks sick. Don't do that to yourself. What else? The indirect lighting is always better. Like, you don't want to have just a bulb sitting there. Nobody wants to look at a light bulb. It's bad for your eye. It's distracting. It doesn't light well. So more indirect lighting, more diffuse lighting is good. I like low lighting, you know, like I don't like things too brightly lit personally. Mm-hmm. It's nice to light plants or something, like put the light against the wall and bounce the light is always a good thing. Okay. Or light a plant up that looks nice.
You know what's the blue light makes me laugh, because like so many people who do podcasts, they put like a blue light strategically in back of them and it like bounces up. Do you see that?
No, I don't know that.
That's like a gamer thing. And it's like a little blue glow in back of them. And it's so bad. Please stop.
Is it like real blue?
Yeah. Like an LED
blue light?
Yeah. Oh, it's trying to look cool, like a multicolor light in back of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like those cars that people have the blue lights underneath them, that kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of like that. But it's not even, you don't even see the light. It's just like going up to give a little flare to their picture. And it's so bad. It's really,
I wonder what that does to the color of their faces. Does it make it more like warm? Because the blue and the, I don't know.
It usually, it's far and back of them. So I don't know if it affects it. This is why I don't really know lighting. I'm like, I have a light here and a light there. And I was like, okay. Well, I think
that works. But you always look good.
Ditto. All right, cool. So we always ask a few questions on the podcast. We always ask them the misfit moment, the moment you knew when the traditional world was not for you.
I saw that question. So I never knew there was a traditional world, I guess. And like I was, you know, I said I went to RISD, and when I got there, I realized I actually fit in there.
Yeah.
And there, you know, it's full of like creative weirdos. And so I was like, oh, now I understand that why I always felt, I felt like a weirdo in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And I didn't really fit in there, but I didn't kind of know it, I guess. I don't know what I thought. I just thought I was a weirdo. And, cool. But then I was like, oh no, these are my people. So yeah, I guess cool. That's
yeah.
When I got to RISD, I was like, yeah, oh my God.
Right.
There's a world that's cool and I like.
Did you get flack for being a weirdo when you were a kid?
Yeah. There were some tough times in elementary school, and really junior high school was rough. Honestly,
The worst.
Yeah, it was tough. There was some times where I was like, I can't go into the cafeteria. What am I gonna do? Like, where do you go? This is sad. I don't want anybody to start crying, but I was like, hide in the gym locker rooms, because if they found you, you'd get in trouble. But I couldn't deal with the, you know, people. So it was like, I didn't know what to do. So I would hide in the bathrooms.
I used to hide in the auditorium. I used to just eat lunch in the auditorium.
Yeah.
And be like, I hate everyone.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to
anyone. It was just awful. Yeah. And then I would like kind of linger. There was, you know, hall monitor, like adults. And I would kind of just go over there and try to like have a conversation with them, because I didn't know what else to do. Yeah. It was not fun.
Yeah. And when I see those kids, I'm always like, the more flack you get, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
Like, you don't want to be them. I was like, they peaked early. They're going down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they always do. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think now kids just have more awareness, too, about, like, you know, nerds and all of that. That wasn't a thing when were not cool, and I don't know. Yeah.
And that now you can reach your crew on social media too.
Right. Yeah.
So you link up with people who feel the way you do. And in some ways it's cool, because it's like they can extrapolate identity like in a different way, because they're like progressing further faster with their identity formation because they just have information for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's more information out there. Even like queer, like we didn't have that. We didn't even have the word.
Right.
Queer wasn't a thing then, you know? It was the weird kids or whatever, but but you know, there's a lot more. I think there's just more word. There are more words out there now to like understand who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what you need in some ways.
For sure.
Even the word artist, like I didn't even know that was a thing.
Right. And I do wonder what it's like for kids who are like in a place like Nebraska. Now, Nebraska, you might be wonderful. I don't know. But I can't imagine there being a lot of like weirdo encouragement there. And so I wonder what it's like for the weirdo kids who go on social media and whatever their thing is, they meet other people and then they're like progressing, like their sense of self is progressing there. And then they open their door and it's like people who hate them. And what is that like? Like, that seems like an interesting.
Hard. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder. Or is it like easier? Because then they like at least know someone's out there somewhere at some point.
Somewhere, escape. Somewhere, yeah. I think it may be easier. Yeah. At least you like have something to identify with.
Yeah.
Even if it's not near you.
Yeah.
You know?
Something to hold on to. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't know.
No, you know what? Those kids, they'll figure it out. Okay.
I'm glad I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Good luck, kids.
I don't have kids.
I know. That's why I'm like, oh, good luck.
Yeah.
So the other question is, what in your down times, what is misfit inspiration, if you will. There we go. What you read, listen to, go to when you're in those moments of like self-doubt and low.
So I'm super athletic, as you know. I go running. Like, generally, if I'm feeling bad, it's because I haven't exercised. Yeah. And I'm basically addicted to whatever it is, dopamine or whatever the thing you get from that. So I'll go and do something, like I'll surf or I'll run or something like that. Yeah. And then I feel better. Like about halfway into a run, I'm like, oh no, I'm okay now. It's just chemistry.
And so you're an artist and then were you always into athletics or like?
Yeah, I always have been, which is not the most natural combo of activities. It's just the way it was what I wanted to do. I was a gymnast when I was a kid and loved that. And then just got into all kinds of activity. I think I was a bit hyperactive probably. So just like running around and jumping and standing on my head and, you know, that's what I always did. So, and it makes me feel good. So I just keep doing it. But I do get inspiration from, I don't know, museums. Museums are usually pretty good. I forget about that. And then I'll go to a museum like, oh God, this is so good. Like I forgot, like, how do I forget every time? And then you remember and you're like, how did I forget? Yeah. One of my favorite spots, my feel good places, is the Noguchi Museum in Queens. If you haven't been, fabulous place.
Wow.
It's so cool. It's small and it's full of Noguchi and they always have some other show, but there's a garden that's just amazing. And that was when I lived in Brooklyn, I would go there a lot.
I'm writing that down.
Not a lot, Noguchi. But I would go there. Oh, it's great. Cool. What else do I do to feel inspiration?
Yeah. Inspiration. Yeah. I mean like Noguchi, I can't believe I didn't know Noguchi. I'm like a Queens. I'm like, I'm from Queens. I know everything about New York. And I'm like,
you don't know the Noguchi Museum. No. Oh my God. It's the best. Yeah. And across the street, pretty much across the street there's a Mark de Souvereau, who's a famous sculptor, a garden, the de Souvereau sculpture garden. And they do a lot of summertime. They'll have like movie nights and stuff and they'll have exhibitions. And that place is really cool. It's right on the water. And you can just hang out there.
Long Island City situation.
Yeah.
That's the fancy part of Queens. Okay.
Well, it's not what it wasn't. I mean, when those guys got spaces there because it was but no, it's not that part. It's north, more north. It's not like where all those new buildings are.
Right.
A little bit north of the BQ, the Queensborough Bridge.
Right. It's like deep Queens. Like we don't even know what's happening over there.
Yeah, that's
like
a totally different thing.
Like I can't take the train there. Yeah, it's not Ozone Park. I don't know what the fuck.
No.
I gotta take the bus there. Forget it. I don't
know. Yeah.
All right. So while we're getting to Queens, well, we're gonna have Carmela Ravoli would like to ask you a question. So we're gonna bring on Carmela. Okay.
Can we talk? Okay. I mean, okay. I don't know.
All right, Andrew. Nice try. Okay. It's good.
I can do this too.
You do better than those. You do better than those improv comedians trying to pretend to be funny.
Not sure about that.
Anything's better than improv. Okay. All right. I told Laura, do you want friends or you want to be a comedian? You got to choose one. Don't do improv. Okay. Friends. Don't be an improv. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to have improv people hating me, but I don't care. You know what? They're too nice to hate. So anyway. They're too busy. Yes. Ending. Okay.
Fuck them.
That's what I'm saying. All right. So it's interesting, you're putting yourself out there and everyone has a comment for everything. So how do you deal with unsolicited feedback? You know, like, oh, so yeah, this is your thing. You know, you should do more oblong or something. You do this thing. Can you give me oblong next time? What do you say to this bullshit? Because it's not the like, oh, I'm inspired by you. This thing is so cool. It's like, oh, I am, maybe an attorney and I think I should have a say on your artistic practice. So what do you say to that?
Honestly, most recently, there is actually an attorney who doesn't have an interior designer. I don't have to deal with that a whole lot because usually I work with interior designers who are great. They're amazing. Thank God for them. Because I don't have to deal with the client then. And that's not my forte. But yeah, I thank them for their input and say I'll think about it. And maybe you'd like this instead. This is what we do. You know, I try to be respectful of their taste and just say, like, hey, you know, maybe there's somebody else that's better for you.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, if I was, say, a different person, then maybe.
Exactly. Yeah.
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 Yeah. If I had no taste and was perhaps someone who didn't understand how things worked, maybe I'd be into that. No, it's, that's why, you know, sometimes I see, so you need like the person, like at after performances often, sometimes a comedian or something will stand outside, but they have someone from security standing right next to them to help quiet the stupid, you know, the people. They do it with a smile too, which is the worst. They really think they're helping. They're like, I am a therapist and I am telling you that I have the key to your success.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's,
maybe I can use employees too. Like sometimes I'd be like, oh, you write back to them.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. You know, if you ever want a part-time, I mean, like maybe an hour a week, I don't really like to work too much, but like, I'd be happy. It's just, I'll sit next to the next exhibit.
Think about that. Thank you.
I'll be like, yes. But like, yes, so talked out. Yeah, that's nice one. Okay, good. That's exciting. Okay, real exciting for you. Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. I like to just the smart. You're so nice about it. You're so much nicer than I would be. You're so nice about it. Like, oh, well, think about it. With no irony in your voice. That's an accomplishment. All right, well, keep doing what you're doing. I love all the lights and stuff. It's pretty. I follow you on Instagram. It's very interesting.
Okay.
Great. All right, I'm going to go by the pool. I got to go. All right, bye.
All right. That was fun.
There she goes.
There she goes.
Where she goes? It's by the pool. She's she raised her martini glass to you.
Leather look on her face. Yeah.
It's leather. Leather's pleather. Or so there's something in there. For
I got leather's pleather. It's pretty.
It covers the wrinkles and it gives you some, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So Andrew, where should people come find out about you? Look at your sculptures,
well, we're working out of LA these days. So, studios in LA, go to my website, AndreaClaireStudio.com, on Instagram. We do post every week. And, I'm doing the show in New York in September. So that'll be fun.
Really fun. Yeah. That'll be cool. Is it going to be like a big party to open it up?
I don't know. It's a show that was started by people in Belgium, and it's been operating in Belgium for many years. And they did, the first year was last year in New York. The first New York version of it was last year. So I don't know. I didn't go to it, but
gotcha.
I do know people that did it and they got a lot out of it. So I'm
cool.
Do it. Yeah. I mean, typically the shows used to be in the spring in New York. Mm-hmm. ICFF, but that show's kind of fallen off the map a little bit. So
yeah,
it's hard to know where to launch new stuff. Like since COVID, things got all fucked up.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, if they're from Belgium, they sound very respectable. So I would think pretty low key subdued.
Belgium's cool. Yeah, apparently a great place to make shit. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, let's go to Belgium. We need somewhere else to go. So
I know we do. I'm thinking about it, honestly.
All right. Well, let us know. All right. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for coming by.
Thanks, Lauren. That was so fun.
There we have it. You can follow Misfits Making It on my social pages at Lauren Logi on all the things, Instagram especially, and also X Twitter thing and Threads and TikTok and YouTube Shorts and all the things. You can get updates and inside info by joining my email list at www.laurenlogi.com. Thank you to Ani Makutsian for editing, Edward Schiller at Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Thank you to Marine Asiant for our new music and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast. And thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes,
Stitcher Radio,
and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.